So, Elizabeth Esty, I mean, I want to see if I can get inside your head and ask you this question. What is your take on being a woman in the United States Congress?
We need more. That's my take. My take is I bring to the table, each one of us who is elected to Congress brings our whole life experience to the table. And I think I benefit from having done a lot of different things in my life. But, you know, having been a mom, a PTA mom in a classroom, having done a lot of volunteering, having to try to convince people to work together who've got different interests, people who aren't paid to do the job, who just volunteer because they think it's important. I think that experience, frankly, is very valuable to my being able to put together coalitions of people to take the time with individual members. I was doing that yesterday on the floor, got a big piece of veterans legislation that I learned about by outreach to veterans about the challenges our returning vets who served in the Middle East are having with burn pit exposure.
Mm.
And this is disposing of everything from human waste to toxic chemicals, to tires, to asbestos, piled in big piles in the desert and set on fire. And that's been the tradition for decades of how the military disposes of things, but it has particularly potentially bad consequences in a desert climate and the kinds of materials that are now being burned. So I learned about this from veterans. I'm working on legislation, getting ready to introduce it. So I was on the Republican side of the floor last night, talking with colleagues and pulling them aside and saying, hey, can you look at this legislation? And could say, please go back to the veterans in your district. I learned about it from the people I represent. I think you're going to hear the same thing I did.
But I started by asking you the woman question,
mm-hmm.
and you said immediately, we need more.
Mm-hmm.
And then you explained some of why we need more. But is there something so fundamental between being a man and a woman that we need more in order to get to that fundamental difference?
I just think we need a U.S. Congress that's broadly representative of the American people, which is to say, you know, American people are 50% plus a little bit female. And if we're going to benefit from the life experience of our diverse country, the Congress should mirror that more closely than it does.
But if they do, you know, I mean, I think there are tremendous differences in terms of priorities. And I think some of the polling really shows that in terms of war, in terms of child rearing, in terms of pre-K, that kind of thing. And that's based, as you say, on an experiential base, right? I mean,
I think the life experience is quite different. And certainly we saw over the last 2 years, my first 2 years in Congress, most of the bipartisan legislation, not that there was a lot, but most of it really had been driven by the women working across the aisle.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been on issues like military sexual assault, on Violence Against Women Act, some of the, as you say, some of the issues around, say, child care or health caretaking for aging parents. Some of the education issues, there's an opportunity based on common life experience, to understand what that means for the folks we represent. I see more willing, a little more more ease with working across the aisle, can I say, with the women. A little less ideological as a general matter. But again, I think it's that diversity of life experience is what really counts.
Talk to me about the Supreme Court. You know, they have tremendous power in this country. We have the ACA, we have the abortion thing, we have all that stuff. They have a tremendous clout. And I know you're interested in politics, but does the Supreme Court count for too much?
You know, there's the saying that nature abhors a vacuum. And what I think we're seeing right now is the failure of Congress to get together and make some very important decisions for the country has left both the executive branch and the judicial branch filling some of that void. You know, we have a three-part system. We have the executive, just to say the president and the president's appointees, et cetera. You have the judicial system. Top of that heap is the Supreme Court, and you have legislative. Top of that is Congress. And if Congress isn't getting things done, we shouldn't be surprised to see the executive expanding, and you shouldn't be surprised to see the court deciding more of these things. So to my colleagues, particularly across the aisle, who rail against the court taking on too much, I say, well, then we should be doing more here. We should be making more of those decisions in the Congress, which is much more broadly representative of the American people than the nine folks sitting on the Supreme Court.
Wait. I don't get something you just said. You just said, particularly my colleagues sitting across the aisle. Now, we know, don't we, that the Supreme Court of the United States is just another Republican House of Congress, maybe. I mean, they're a bunch of Republicans. You're telling me that the Republicans across the aisle have issues with the court?
I think they have issues oftentimes in feeling that the Supreme Court is, they've certainly felt at various points the Supreme Court's been undemocratic. And if you look at, say, the same-sex marriage cases, they don't agree with some of those decisions, have not in the past, have not on Roe versus Wade. You know, there may well be some decisions coming down in the next couple of weeks by July 1 that they may strongly disagree with. But again, there's no excuse for members of Congress not to do the American people's job and try to figure out a way to reach compromise. And it's going to have to be compromise. The country is divided. It's not just the members of Congress. The country does have very significant differences of opinion about the size and scope of government. Let's use an example of something that's been going on right now. Look at all that flooding in Texas, right?
Yep.
The same members of Congress who are going to be coming to ask me and my colleagues in the Northeast, New York, New England, for help with FEMA funds are the very same members who voted against giving us FEMA money for relief with Superstorm Sandy. Well, this may be a teachable moment about the importance of us being a unified country and the federal government standing by American citizens wherever they live in this great country.
So when you say a teachable moment, there must be some part of you that says this is a good time to get even with them for not giving us the help.
Politically, there might be a reason to try to do that to make it clear to voters, but I'll tell you, my view is I'm elected to help serve everybody who lives in the United States, and I'm not going to punish somebody in Texas to try to make a point about their representatives. I'm going to try to help people who I think we're all elected to serve. But I hope that message comes through. I hope that message comes through about the value and importance of a functioning federal government that establishes necessary safety nets and allows each American, no matter where he or she lives, no matter their zip code, as there's been a lot of coverage, whether you're, born in Waterbury, Connecticut, or whether you're in, Miami Beach, that everybody's got a good shot at the American dream.
Wow. Well, one thing is clear to me, Elizabeth Essie, you are a very busy person, and you're doing a great job, and we thank you so much for showing up and for giving us this much valuable time, and it is valuable, and I know it, and we appreciate it. So thanks again, and we'll be talking to you soon.
Thanks so much, Alan. It's always great to be with you.